We have a 6-month-old puppy called Alfie. He's a border poo. Have you ever heard of a border poo? A cross between a border terrier and a toy poodle. He is very sweet and very lively. When we first got him, if we put food down, he would literally hoover it up. It was like he was inhaling it through his nose, mouth, ears, everywhere. It was gone in seconds. But we've just noticed he's becoming fussy. We know he's hungry because when I have treats in my pockets or I'm eating my food, he's there begging for all sorts of food that he shouldn't have and won't do him any good. But when I put down his own food, the food that actually is nutritious and good for him, he goes up to it, sniffs it, pushes it around with his nose in a bowl, and then walks away uninterested and looks at me as if to say, no thanks, I prefer something else. You know, it's exactly the same that is happening here in this passage. Jesus has been surrounded by a crowd, and many of those, I'm sure, have been following him for a long time, not just 12, but a whole load, such that Jesus calls them disciples, not just 12, but vast numbers. They've all crammed into a synagogue to hear him. And he offers them food and drink. Verse 56, whoever eats my flesh, literally means gnaws my flesh, and drinks my blood, remains in me, and I in him. He kind of likens himself to the manna in the desert that the Israelites ate as they were on that journey, that long journey to the promised land that nourished them. Yet he says, the food that I offer is even greater. They ate and then they died. Because it only keeps you going for a certain amount of time. He says, whoever feeds on this bread that I give will live forever. I am offering you eternal life, says Jesus. But what do? They sniff it. They push it around. But then they walk away saying they prefer something else. This is hard teaching. Who can accept it, they say. In effect, this is not the kind of food that we're after. You can't expect us to eat this. And we're told that from this time, many of the disciples turned back and no longer followed him. The contrast to the beginning of chapter 6 is stark. There the crowds are massive. There they have seen something so appealing in Jesus, the miraculous sign as he fed 5,000, actually 5,000 men, therefore probably 20,000, including women and children, at least. He feeds them with the tiniest amount of physical food, and they are nourished for that day. It's miraculous. They love it. And when Jesus and the 12 disciples disappear across the lake, the crowds pile into lakes, and off they go, this great armada, to try and find Jesus again. They can't get enough of him. But now, they're uninterested. Now, shaking their heads, they walk away. Why? Because I think in those words, eat my flesh, drink my blood, Jesus has upped the stakes. He's laid before them what the key to their hunger is and how it can be met. They want life. They want eternal life, fullness of life, which everybody wants, don't they? Then he says there's only one way. Full and total commitment to me. That is the only way. Physical bread will fill you up, but the next day you'll go hungry again. But if you want your deepest desires and deepest needs for each and every day, from now to eternity, then it needs a different kind of food. It needs a spiritual food. And that comes by being totally and completely committed to me, all or nothing. Take me on board fully. Will you do that? And I want to make 3 points very quickly that come from this. The first is this. For some, the cost of following Jesus is too much. For some, the cost of following Jesus is too much. There is another incident in the Gospels when the disciples also say to Jesus, this teaching is too hard. It's too hard to believe. I wonder if you can remember when it was. It was when he told the story, or that little parable, the picture of the camel and the eye and the needle. He says how hard it is for rich people to enter into the kingdom of heaven. And it all starts with a rich young ruler coming to Jesus. who says to him, what do I need to do to get eternal life? That's what the rich young ruler wants, as we all do. How do I find that nourishing meaning to life, fulfillment that we all long for? And he tells Jesus that he's kept all the commandments. And I expect he's expecting Jesus to say, great, I love moral teaching. I love that you've kept them. You're clearly a great person in the eyes of the world. Of course you're in. There's no problem. You're safe. But Jesus doesn't, does he? He tells the man to go and sell everything he has, to give it to the poor, and follow him. And we're told the man walks away sad. Jesus asked for everything. Give me, are you prepared to give me everything? To do whatever I ask to follow me. Is your commitment to me total? And the man says no. I can go so far, but I can't go all the way. I want to hang on to control of some bits of my life. I can't give you it all. The cost was too high. And the disciples were shocked. Sometimes I think we lower the bar of what Jesus actually asks of us. Jesus raises the bar very high indeed. And this issue is the same here. Eternal life is not found in just being a good person. You know, whenever I do a funeral, I'm always told that the person whose funeral I'm taking never hurt anyone and would always help everyone. Everyone is a saint when they die, aren't they? But Jesus doesn't measure us just by human moral goodness. That's not how we find eternal life. Jesus says the way you find eternal life, the life of God, is through a wholehearted commitment to me. Do you know what it says in John 17, verse 3? This is eternal life, that you know the only true God and his Son whom he sent. Eternal life is not found in doing certain things. It is found in a relationship with God and a relationship with Jesus Christ whom he sent. That's what the Bible is really clear about. That's why it requires a commitment of relationship to Jesus, not just doing a few good things. And a commitment to go wherever he would lead us, no matter what the cost. My daughter, when she was 15, came to my wife and I. I was the vicar, my wife was the paid youth worker in the church, and said, I don't believe it anymore, I don't want to come to church. It was a devastating moment. But we loved her dearly. I came up a little pact with her. I called it Auntie Nellie time. I said, Becca, when I was your age, I used to have to go and visit Auntie Nellie. I hated it. It was the most boring time we ever spent, but we had to go because we were family. So, Becca, I want you to treat church as Auntie Nellie time for 1 year. It's what we do as a family, and it's only an hour and a bit. Will you come with us and still be family for a year? And if when you're 16, you still think you don't believe, then that's fine, we won't put any pressure, you do whatever you want. And she said, that's fine. So for a year she came, on her 16th birthday she said, Dad, I don't believe. I said, fine. Broke my heart, and my wife's heart, because she didn't come to church. She didn't come, and then, amazingly, in the middle of COVID, last year, she gave her life to Christ, aged 24. She was living with her boyfriend, they were talking about getting married. She gave a testimony at a Christian camp just 3 weeks ago. It's a camp she has been on since she was in the womb. Because we've been leaders on it for years, a Christian youth camp. She gave her testimony. She spoke of why she walked away from Jesus all those times back. And she said, personally, the cost was too great. She knew that if she followed Jesus, he would want all of her. And she wasn't prepared to give up all of herself to him. She wanted to retain control of parts of her life. She wasn't prepared to go all out. Yet she knew also, she said, that there was a gaping hole that just she couldn't get rid of. She knew there was something there nagging away. And in the end, she gave her life to Christ just last year. She was living, as I said, with a boyfriend. She moved out. She just felt, said to him, I'm sorry, I just know Jesus wants me to not be living with someone before I get married. We hadn't told her that, just that's what she decided. It was very, very costly. The relationship broke up. But she now has given her life to Christ. It is costly. It demands everything. Eat my flesh, drink my blood, be fully in me and I in you. For some, the cost is too great. Secondly, following Jesus does involve facing the tough issues. Do you know, I think as Christians sometimes we get embarrassed by the struggles and tough questions of Christianity. We get embarrassed by some of the tough teaching of Jesus. We kind of play it down. Now, Jesus' teaching actually was really tough, wasn't it? Do you remember in the Sermon on the Mount? He says, don't just not murder people. Don't even have angry feelings in your hearts. We're all condemned. It doesn't say just don't commit adultery. It says if you have a lustful thought, and you may be saying the chance will be a fine thing, but actually just what goes on in your heart condemns you. That is tough. The bar is very high. And more than that, following Jesus means we face often difficult situations, suffering, the age-old question, how can a God who loves us put many people through such difficult times? Maybe look at what's going on in Afghanistan and you're just thinking, where is God in the midst of all of this? I had a lovely friend at my last church. In her life, she'd seen lots of terrible things. The death of her young baby, her worship-leading husband had left her, and more recently she had cancer, and then very recently her husband has got cancer. What really made her upset was when we had a testimony slot in church. We called it What's God Been Doing, and someone came up and talked very earnestly about their child's hamster becoming ill or hurt, and how they had prayed and the hamster had got healed. Well, my friend came up to me at the end of the service I just led, and she was seething. She was so angry. What kind of a God heals a hamster, but lets my baby die, my marriage collapse, and me and my husband get cancer? I had not an answer. Do you know what happened? She started up a group in our church. I was very nervous of this group. It was called Misfits. And it was people who wanted to talk about their doubts and struggles with their faith. I took the decision to let it happen, even though lots of people said, you shouldn't do this. You can't have a group like that. I said, no, I kind of think they need to face what they're facing and be honest about it. Do you know, 4 years since I left that church, that group of Christians are still there in the church, still serving, still with faith. They've not abandoned it, but they were not prepared to ignore the painful realities and the dark questions. You see, it is tough following Christ. It raises tough questions for us. Do you know, if you read the Psalms, you'll often find this. Often you'll find despair in the psalmist. They're railing at God. Why have you allowed this to happen? Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? But also in the midst of it, you'll often find the glimmer of faith. Actually, that psalmist doesn't go, God, God, why have you forsaken me? He says, my God, why have you forsaken me? In fact, what's the next psalm? Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. It is really rough, Lord, but you're my shepherd. I will hang on to you. And that is what following Christ is like. It is tough. There are tough questions. There are things that don't make sense. But we trust. We hang on to him because he has the words of eternal life, which brings me to the very last thing I want to say. Nobody else and nothing else offers what Jesus offers. I love the disciples. I imagine them standing there. They've been part, and when I say the disciples, I mean the 12 disciples. They've been part of this big crowd, and that crowd suddenly starts to walk away, disgruntled, disillusioned with Jesus. Maybe it was thousands, maybe it was just hundreds by the time they were in the synagogue. But suddenly there's an eerie silence, and the 12 are left. I imagine them, they're rather nervous. And they look, and they see crowds walking off into the distance, and they're probably wondering, maybe they're right. Maybe they're right, and we've got it wrong all this time. Maybe we've been stupid following Jesus. I wonder if you ever had that feeling. Being a Christian today is a minority sport, isn't it? There's a lot of people around think we're completely stupid sitting here on a Sunday morning. A lot of people. And it'd be very easy at times to think, maybe they're all right out there. Maybe I should get down at the car boot sale that I drove past where there are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people out there at 8:30 on a Sunday morning. Maybe they're right. Maybe we're wrong. Do you know, I have to be honest with you, even as a vicar, even as an archdeacon, I have those moments and I wonder, have I got it wrong? Are they right? Maybe like the disciples, my head's down, I'm kind of scratching the dust in my sandals, thinking, should I go? Should I just give up? And Jesus says to them, what are you going to do? Are you going to go or are you going to stay? He says, you've got to make a decision. You can't do this half-heartedly. You can't be half here and half with them. You've got to be either with me or not. Which are you going to choose? And I love their response. It's one of my favourite verses in the whole Bible. Simon Peter says, to whom should we go? We've got nowhere else to go. We have seen enough to know that you are the Holy One of God. You are God Himself, and therefore the words you bring are life. There is no one else worth following. No one else offers to us what you do. And we know that no one else thinks that's true, and we know that we've just been like a small little group, and it all seems ridiculous, but we've seen enough to believe. And we are sticking with you. No matter. My friends this morning, maybe it's tough for you being a follower of Jesus. Maybe you're tempted to probably just go and do the car boot sale instead on a Sunday. I'd love to see some people saying no. Because Jesus has the words of eternal life. Stick with him. You can guarantee he will stick with you.